My sermon today will have 3 points. I'm telling you that right now so that you know where I'm at, but I also know where I'm at. First is this. There was a father and a son, and they were having breakfast. The father had cooked breakfast, and he was trying to teach the young lad about commitment and sacrifice. And so he turned to his son and said, "What do you see before you?" And he said, "Eggs and bacon." And the dad says, "I see offering and sacrifice. The chicken made an offering. The pig, a sacrifice. The chicken made an offering. He gave something. The pig gave everything. Be the bacon. Be the bacon." In your marriage, do you want your husband or wife to make an offering or a sacrifice? If you are employed, do you expect your fellow employees, when they show up, to make an offering or to make a sacrifice? If you run a business, do you expect your employees to make an offering or a sacrifice? If you're on a team, do you hope that your fellow teammates are going to make an offering or a sacrifice? Jesus clearly says today that the first commandment is that we shall love the Lord your God with all, not part, not a percentage, but with all your heart, all your soul, and all of your mind. Be the bacon. Don't be a chicken. Give everything. And in that, you will find freedom. You will find peace. You will find your purpose. Be the bacon. Point two. Jesus is tested today in a certain way, and he's asked to say, what is the greatest commandment? And he ultimately summarizes the whole law and the prophets in these two commandments. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and your mind, and your neighbor as yourself. Now, we all know the Ten Commandments really, really well. So let's do a quick summary of the Ten Commandments. Get your fingers ready. Ready? You remember this? This is a quick review for some of you. Ready? Thou shalt have no other gods besides me. How many gods are you allowed to have? Do not take his name in. You see the V, right? By the way, can we talk about taking God's name in vain just for a second? I know that I've preached about taking God's name in vain before, and I will continue to do so because it is a mortal sin. Just to clarify, it is a mortal sin to intentionally take God's name in vain. Try taking God's name in front of the presence of a Muslim. Try taking God's name in vain in the presence of Hamas. Just try that. And let us ask ourselves a question: what does it mean when our family members and our friends and our children and the music that we listen to and the television shows that we watch all takes God's name and we do nothing? We just keep listening to it. We just allow it. There has to come a point where we say enough is enough. As I've said before, if someone took your wife's name in vain and you said nothing, if someone took your husband's name in vain, your child's name in vain, I hope to God you would say something, do something, and act differently than you normally do. And yet someone's taking God's Almighty's name in vain. First commandment, have no other gods. Second commandment, do not take his name in. Third commandment, the way that we worship is we go to Mass, and that's how we keep holy the Sabbath, right? Third commandment, the way that we worship is we go to Mass, that's how we keep, that's a K, by the way. Keep holy the Sabbath, right? So the first three commandments, what is Jesus saying? Those three commandments are what? You should love the Lord your God with all your heart, your soul, and your mind. If we love God with all our heart, our soul, and our mind, then we aren't going to have other gods. We're not going to take his name in vain. We're going to worship. We're going to go to Mass and keep holy the Sabbath, right? So the first three commandments are about our relationship with God. From that, if we love God, we then will love our neighbor. So the next seven commandments are about how we love our neighbor. So what's the first of those commandments? It's the fourth commandment. What's the fourth commandment? Right? Parents, this is what you expect, right? Fourth commandment, honor your mother and father, right? So just, right? Because it's a relationship. Parents, do you expect your child to obey you? Yes. Children, do you expect your parents to respect you? Yes. By the way, Children, your parents do not obey you. They respect you. But it's a relationship. Love your neighbor as you love yourself. What's the fifth commandment? Fourth commandment, honor your mother and father. Fifth commandment is what? Thou shalt not, right? Don't kill, right? Okay, so do we believe this commandment? Do you believe that commandment? So the how many of you have gone to Ohio and knocked on doors and told people that the vote that they cast in less than a week will very possibly unleash Satan and the death of millions of children to be codified into their state constitution? Like, do we believe it, or is it just something we say? Do you want someone to kill you? No. Thou shalt not kill. Love your neighbor as yourself. Fourth commandment, honor your mother and father. Fifth commandment, thou shalt not kill. Sixth commandment is what? Thou shalt not commit adultery. Here's a husband or a wife. What should you not do? Sixth commandment, you shall not take someone else's wife or husband into your house. That's a physical act of taking someone else's husband or wife. And if you're not married, by the way, just so you know, and you're like, oh, that doesn't pertain to me because I'm not married. No, that is someone's future husband or wife, and thus you don't take them into your bedroom. The sixth commandment, thou shalt not commit adultery. Would you like someone to take your husband or wife into their bedroom? No. Would you like someone to commit adultery with your husband or wife? No. It's called, I'm going to love my neighbor as myself. I don't want that to happen to anybody else. So I'm not going to do it either. Seventh commandment, right? Thou shall not steal, right? I'm stealing. Don't steal. Stop stealing. If you went out to your car right after Mass today and someone had stolen your car, would you be upset? Yeah, right? So we don't steal. Same is true for, we don't steal people's answers on their tests at school. It's cheating. It's stealing. Fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh. What's the eighth commandment? Thumbs in. Thou shalt not bear false witness. What do we normally do when we lie? Gossip, detraction. Do you want people to lie to you? No, no one likes to be lied to. No one likes to be gossiped about. No one likes to know that people are talking behind their back. Eighth commandment, thou shalt not lie. Ninth commandment. Sixth commandment and ninth commandment, by the way, are related. Sixth commandment is with a physical human being. What's the ninth commandment? It's mental. So this is no longer one wife that I'm having adultery with. This is now multiple women that I'm mentally having adultery with. How? Well, pornography, the internet, trashy love romance novels that women think are okay to read because I'm not doing anything. No, you are. You're having mental adultery. It's evil. What is the ninth commandment? Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife. And then what's the tenth commandment? I shall not covet my neighbor's goods. Sticky fingers. I want what everybody else wants, which means what? I'm not actually spending time realizing what I do have, how blessed I am, and I want what other people want. Jesus summarizes all the law and the prophets by simply saying, love the Lord your God with all your heart, your soul, and your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. We all know this. And we actually know that this actually leads to living our lives in the most beautiful way, because no one wants to be treated that way. No one wants to be treated as an object. No one wants to be lied to. No one wants to feel threatened. No one wants to feel abused. And thus the commandments, the commandments are so good. The commandments are freedom. The commandments lead to joy. They are not oppressive. They are not burdensome. In fact, they're the best way to live. And God gives them to us because sometimes we forget and we need the law. We shouldn't need the law, though, but sometimes we need it. And thanks be to God for that. Love your neighbor as yourself. Point one, point two, point three. Okay. Many of you know that I coach cross country. 35 years ago, I ran in my first cross-country race. I've been coaching for 12 years. And yesterday was the IHSAA, the Indiana High School Athletic Association's state cross-country meet. It was hosted near Terre Haute, the Laverne Gibson cross-country course. For those of you who have never been to a cross-country meet, you're missing out. I'd like to say today, as we get ready for All Saints Day, which we celebrate the vigil on the 31st and All Saints Day is on the 1st. That's what All Hallows Eve is, or Halloween. I'd like to make an analogy, and I want to make a bold statement that cross-country is like heaven. Some of you are like, Father, cross-country is like hell. Me running 3.1 miles like would be a miracle. That's the only way that it'd be like heaven, Father. There's no way that cross-country can be like heaven. Well, let me just continue. So yesterday was the IHSAA state cross-country meet. There were 250 runners in the boys' race and 250 runners in the girls' race. In the IHSAA, there are very, very few sports that don't have classes or divisions. So in football and in basketball, you have like class A or class B or class C and divisions and how big your school is. In cross country, that's not the case at all. Everyone competes against everyone, no matter the size of your school. So if you take 250 girls, 250 boys, that's 500 runners that are competing all at the exact same time from schools all across the state. Now, continue doing some math with me. An average runner at the state meet has about 20 people that are there watching them run. Do some quick math. How many people are at this cross-country race? About 10,000 people. There are no benches. There are no bleachers. There are no chairs. There are 10,000 people in a field. And when the gun goes off, not only are the 250 people that are racing running, but so is every single spectator. On an average cross-country race that I coach, I clock about 1.5 miles just cheering on my runners. Now, if you go to a baseball game or a football game or a basketball game, you are there to cheer for your team and your team alone. In fact, you don't want the other team to win. And in fact, you might very possibly boo or taunt the other team. If you are a referee or an umpire at a baseball game or a basketball game or a football game, you will most likely be yelled at. You might have things thrown at you. This is not the case at cross country. In cross country, everyone cheers for everyone. You cheer for those that you're there racing for, but you actually cheer for everyone. And this is where I want to put forth the idea that cross country is a small glimpse of heaven. If you could see a field of 10,000 people running, those 10,000 people are cheering for every single runner. It is deafening. And often to the point that you can't even hear what you yourself are saying because so many people are cheering. And I want you to realize right now that that is what is happening at every moment in your life. On All Saints Day, we will celebrate not Saint Teresa Benedict of the Cross, not Saint Francis of Assisi, not Saint Thomas More, not Saint Mother Teresa. We will be celebrating your aunts and your uncles and your grandparents and your mothers and your fathers and for some of you, your children. And what are those saints doing right now? What are those thousands of upon thousands individuals doing? What are they doing right now? They are cheering for you. They are screaming and yelling and interceding before the throne of God because they love you. When you go to a cross-country race, the crowd literally follows wherever the kids are running on the course. The crowd just keeps running all over the place because there are no benches, there are no chairs, there is no stadium. And people are screaming. People are crying. Keep going. Don't give up. I believe in you. You can do it. Cross the line. Make it to the finish. I am proud of you. I believe in you. You can do it. You can. You will. Keep going. Don't give up. 10,000 people cheering. Yesterday at the girls' meet, the first and second place runners were amazing. They also were completely, in the eyes of the world, unknown and unexpected. Libby, who won the state meet, ran a time of 17:06. By the way, that is a 5 minute and 30 second mile being run by a girl three times consecutively in one race. Second place was by Nikki Sutherland. She ran a 17:15. These two girls are not from Carmel, Indiana, the largest high school in the state of Indiana that has over 5,000 students. They're not from Zionsville, which is the richest school district in the state of Indiana. They're from Indian Creek and Delta, most likely schools that you've never even heard of because there's less than 700 students in their schools. They're no names, they're no one, they're nothing. In the rank and the prestige and the expectations, and the same is true for the majority of us. And yet I will tell you, off the lips of every single person in that race yesterday was, "Go, Nikki, go, Libby." Parents that were there to see their daughter run were cheering for Libby and for Nikki to just do their best. And they did. And it was amazing. When they crossed the line, people were cheering, people were crying. But I will tell you, there is one very peculiar thing about cross-country races. It's not always about who crosses the line first. Because the loudest cheer was not for Libby and for Nikki, who took first and second. Because at cross-country races, the loudest cheer is for the person who finishes last. Because they finished and they crossed the line. And that's our goal. Our goal is to cross the line. Our goal is to make it to our eternal reward. And how we get there, or how your son or your daughter or your grandchild who's left the faith, how they get there, we don't know. But we put our faith and our trust in a merciful God that they will cross the line. And we believe that their patron saints and their guardian angels, and that even us, their brothers and sisters that they can visibly see, are standing alongside them, cheering and rooting the entire time, waiting for them to finish, believing that the impossible is possible. You see, my brothers and sisters, cross country really is a glimpse of heaven. And the saints that we celebrate this upcoming week, they are cheering and they are rooting for you. They're cheering and they're rooting for you that you will be the bacon, that you will choose to be a person who gives your all, a person who sacrifices everything for the sake of loving God and loving our neighbor. They're cheering for you and interceding for you and believing that you can do what sometimes seems impossible, because it's not. It is possible. And the saints in heaven who have gone before us, they point the way, they lead the way to what may seem impossible, and they make it possible. So no matter where you're at in your walk and your journey, I want you to know that the race, it's not over. The hill or the mountain that you're climbing right now, that you can crest it, and that you can finish, and you can run the race. We believe in you, and you're strong enough. Because Jesus gave us the two laws today: to love the Lord your God with all your heart, your soul, and your mind, and to love your neighbor as yourself. With these as our guide, with these as our aid, may we persevere in running the race, and may we one day be with all the saints, the thousands of upon thousands, in the glories of heaven. Amen.